Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. And for those of you who are kind of interested in some ideas dealing with the concepts of democracy and what that may mean in terms of consciousness and how our world is supposed to function, and spirituality, today's show is kind of going to be what may be considered a little bit of an odd mix, because I'm bringing those two together to try to explain some things that are a little bit out there, but not so far out that I think most of the listeners will have trouble with, and maybe a little controversial for some people, because basically we have, for those of you who are listeners in the United States, we have, me being included, more of an ethnocentricity about what democracy is and what it means. For some of those of you who are listening in other parts of the world, you may have a different slant on the whole idea. So, unfortunately, only those in the U.S. and Canada can call in. I wish I could get to have everybody call in, but that's not possible because we don't have that hooked up yet. At any rate, if you are in the U.S., you can call in at 877-876-5227. Those in Canada, 888-815-9756. Okay, so let's talk about what I mean by democracy. So I hope to define most of what I have as my opinions, and of course they are my opinions and not, you know, absolutes. Democracy is a means by which those who are seeking to be governed choose the method under which and the ways in which they are going to be governed through their own decisions. And it can be through a predetermined doctrine, such as a constitution, etc., but it is nonetheless through the wishes and thoughts and eventually voting decisions of those who are going to be governed by whatever source is governing them that they choose the method, etc. And the most important part of this is both freedom and choice and freedom to choose in the future and freedom for those who have a different opinion and are in the minority to still be respected in basic rights, which are determined prior to the time that any voting takes place, usually a long time before. That's why constitutions are so oftentimes needed. So that's my definition. Now, you may have a completely different one. You might say, well, democracy is this or that. That's okay. Call in and let me know. But the key here is that democracy requires relatively high levels of consciousness in the population to plan ahead. Consciousness and planning are kind of like the same thing, only different sides of a same coin. So you gotta have this planning thing. I mean, you gotta plan to have a constitution that makes sense. You gotta protect the rights of the minority. You gotta have a way of changing things if they go wrong. If you have a representative democracy, which is called a republic, then you need to have a way of electing people who are going to serve, and if you want to get rid of them, a way of impeaching them and throwing them out of office, and just all kinds of things that requires a lot of planning. And planning and consciousness really virtually the same thing. So you've got to be able to see the big picture and see into the future. That's what I'm really saying when I'm talking about planning and consciousness being tied together. And so, consequently, in order to have a working democracy, you need to have a relatively more conscious population. This is the test and the real problem in spiritual terms for our world, for this world. There are probably well over 1,000 to 2,000 planets in our galaxy that are physical worlds like Earth and that have intelligent human life, some of them probably more advanced than we are. Now you might say, oh, well, that doesn't make sense. I think there's only us and we're kind of all alone. Well, you know, it's very difficult to have a planet like Earth because this is the most difficult planet in which to create life on. But even so, there's just so many hundreds, over 100 million, maybe 150 million, who knows, stars in our galaxy. And even though there's only a narrow area in which life can really exist around a star and within the galaxy itself, you still end up with probably in the thousands of planets that could be supporting life at this time, as intelligent or more so than we. So consequently, Earth is, you know, we'll call it a minority, but it's a specialized kind of minority, and for us to be conscious enough to develop democracy in general, we have to be at a certain level of development as human beings. And we're barely there. Now, you might say, oh, wait a second. I thought we're, you know, we're way advanced. But actually, we're not. We're struggling with this ability in our consciousness and our spiritual development. Spiritual meaning that we understand our own creator and represent that within our behaviors and in our thoughts. And we don't do that very often in reality compared to what we do all the time, which is usually selfish and facing away from those bigger parts of who we could be. And so it's very difficult for democracy to get a foothold and to maintain itself and to function in any reasonable way in this particular world, because Earth, in comparison to those maybe other 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever it is, planets in our galaxy. Now, remember, there's like could be 100 billion galaxies out there. So, I mean, that's a huge, huge number. So there's still a lot of vast possibilities for additional life, he says, what's in our galaxy. But we are at the kind of the bottom, near the bottom, in terms of our ability to govern ourselves in ways, as I defined it at the beginning of the show. This is our problem. It's a dilemma. And it's more than something that is just coincidental or just happen chance. It is really based upon who we are and how we've developed ourselves to this point in terms of consciousness. This is kind of scary. And it may be against, we'll say, the politically correct way of looking at things. I think that many people want to have kind of a rosy picture of our world. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I would like to look at the positive side of things myself. But if we're going to really examine the level of success of democracy in the world as it is today, it's relatively limited and has a lot of foibles and problems. And I'm going to go through some of them and how we might be able to solve them in the near future, and how we can promote, as a country that is probably the leading country in terms of the development of democracy, we need to be sober and very, we'll say, demonstrative, and maybe even very clear thinking about what the limits are of people to create democracy in a world that is still relatively primitive in its own consciousness, as Earth, unfortunately, is. Now, you can say, well, why is Earth still such a problem? And if you've heard some of my earlier shows, Earth is in a test. We're kind of, one of our things, it's like a laboratory, it's a huge laboratory, and we're trying to overcome certain kinds of evil. Now, one of the things that evil loves to do is to say, well, I don't want to be like my creator, instead I want to be my own creator and forget that creator that you're talking about, if it even exists anyway, and who cares? I want to be everything I want to be, and I don't care about other people. I am totally self-absorbed and self-powerful and self-interested, and that's about it. Okay, so evil tends to do that, and it does it by reversing concepts that we hold dear and important, and it hides. It sort of says, well, there's no such thing as evil. There's just people who've had a rough time, they had a bad life when they were earlier. And there's no such thing. It's just sort of a misunderstood thing about people, you know. But there is. Unfortunately, it's even a permeated consciousness that goes way beyond our own galaxy, throughout the universe. There is this element in humanity only, but it seeps over to other kingdoms as well. But it really is part of being human, where humans fight about using their sense of God, their sense of the Creator, which we are the first beings, that in any kingdom below us, we are the first that actually can sense that we are connected to our Creator, and that there is a Creator, and that we recognize that. That's really important. And we are, unfortunately, some of us are battling this. Some of us are in doubt of it, and some of us have trouble accepting it. Okay, this problem with evil has, for some time, created a need to overcome a very specific kind of evil, which is more mental than emotional, and that deals with things like democracy. Believe it or not, democracy is the thing that evil really fears and wants to attack. You might say, why? Well, because democracy is a proponent of freedom, and evil seeks to destroy freedom because freedom is the first part of the Creator's own thought. So if you want to get rid of the Creator, you got to get rid of freedom, because then you don't have to worry about anything overcoming you if you're evil, you see. Because then you can use fear and misery and torture and connivance and manipulation to get people to do what you want, you see. And so those who are seeking to become more powerful and that actually have some element of evil in them are very much the antithesis and against democracy. And they use excuses to get rid of democracy or to defile it or to do something to put it out of the consciousness of those they control. They'll say, well, with democracy will come all kinds of ravagings of our nation or of our city or whatever it might be, and we, our tribe, because it will disrupt, it will cause a great disorganization, it will lead to chaos. Yes, we'll do all those things because the people aren't really conscious enough to participate. Now, you might say, well, wait a second, didn't you say that a lot of people aren't conscious enough to yet participate or to create democracy? To some extent, that's true. But I also am saying that evil uses that idea to convince those people who might be, we'll say, brought to a higher level of consciousness, that they should actually lower their consciousness and should only consider ways of getting more powerful themselves, getting more material things themselves, and forget about their Creator. The key here is how much are they fighting against the understanding of one's Creator in their society, not whether they are promoting or not promoting democracy as we have defined it in this program so far, as I have defined it in this program so far, but more about what they are doing to destroy it and destroy its, we'll say, further development through the development of consciousness in the population. I'm going to use an example. I don't want you to think that this one example in any way, shape, or form represents even close to the total number of people or certainly not countries that are affected by the very concept that I'm telling you. But I'm going to use this because it's in the news all the time. The United States is intimately tied in many ways to this country, and they are hyping the fact that the Olympics are coming, etc. And this is, of course, used to be called Red China, which is now just the People's Republic of China. As far as I'm concerned, it is the dark side of the Chinese people, because the government that is in control there uses all of the reasons that I only just described that evil uses to try to dissuade us and the rest of the world, as well as their own inhabitants, that democracy is really a bad thing for them, because there'll be chaos. There'll be so many things that are going to go wrong if these poor people were just given the choice to have what kind of government they want and what kind of laws they want to live under, and what kind of freedoms they are deserving of, etc. This is the tactics that are employed, and some of the people in our country unfortunately, have fallen victim to believing in this absolute nonsense. Now, I don't want you to think, again, that Red China is the only country on the planet that has this problem. There are literally many, many dozens of countries that use the same exact rhetoric in different, well, I shouldn't say exact, but a similar rhetoric and to convince their people and maybe us of this nonsense that I'm referring to. Now, I'm going to deal with the contradiction that I have brought up in this beginning of the program about the question of, okay, if you don't want to be evil, you have to permit people to have democracy, but you've also said, I've also said, that there are those that really are not able at this moment to be conscious enough to govern themselves. They're not capable of it because they don't seek to have a government that plans well enough. They don't seek to plan well enough themselves. They don't seek to even have the rules, the laws, et cetera, that are necessary, and the respect for minority rights, et cetera, that are so important in terms of having a democracy. I will deal with that. But I'm going, you know, and I love these cliffhangers. I'm going to save it for the next section after the commercial. Of course I'm going to do that, because I know that, you know, that keeps you all probably listening in, and I'm willing to pull that one out if I can. But also because it's a little entailed, and I want you to have the time to think about it after we go to break. So I want, or during the time we're at break, so that you can think about, you know, well, what is he getting at? How can we resolve a problem that seems to be of that nature? But let me continue on. Let me continue on with the issues that are preventing democracy from evolving that are not really just based on consciousness, but really based upon evil and or, we'll say, those who are misguided into believing the stories that evil has spun for literally thousands of years, giving us the idea that in some way, yeah, we can't have a democracy, we've got to have a stability. We've got to have stability means a strong hand, and we've got to have people who are tortured and their human rights are taken away. Put them in the gulag. Have them make shoes. You know, what the heck? We're going to wear them anyway. That's good. You know? I mean, this sort of thing is the hallmark of hypocrisy among some of us, and maybe we all are suffering on a national scale and internationally too, those countries that do have democracy are failing to see the truth and want to believe that, and it's convenient to do so, that it's okay to allow countries to squelch democracy as long as they sell us our shoes at a third the price, or maybe supply us with various goods and services that we no longer want to do at a very low rate, not being concerned about how those goods and services are being produced and by whom, and that the ultimate price we are paying is that eventually the karma, I call it karma, will come back on us, because the countries that we presently are supporting to do this will be our greatest enemies and will seek to destroy us, because after all, we are democracies and they want to destroy democracy. It's time for us to wake up, isn't it? Because if we don't, the fact that we're trading with them, the fact that we're supporting them, the fact that we're not actively defining their ways as being wrong, we're being careful not to insult them. All of that's going on, and what's going to happen is, boy, we're going to be nailed hard, not just from Red China, but a number of other countries who we are failing to watch out for the human rights of their people and failing to realize that our continued support of their economic systems, of their military systems, and of their lives is going to lead to our own destruction. Now, you might say, oh, wow, that's pretty serious stuff. How come you're so negative about that? Well, because it has happened so many times before, and we have failed to learn from history. Because even if it had never happened before, a reasonable person could see the ultimate outcome in a short period of time. I'm talking about like 5 or 10 years of what's going to be taking place while we support these evil dictators and crazy governments that destroy the very thing that we hold so dear, which is freedom. The United States, especially, has been a great defender of freedom in itself. But its ability and its, we'll say, wherewithal to stand against the dictates against freedom have only been under extreme circumstances, such as wars, and not all of them wars, and situations where our real, we'll say, significant immediate interests are at hand. The rest of the time, we have really backed off. And we need to stop doing that because the dangers are inherent and the karma is serious and we will be facing some very, very, we'll say, significant issues. And I'm not talking about 20 years from now. I don't even think it's 10 years out. I think it's about 5. And in 5 years, we're going to be facing some very, very serious issues that we will not be able to completely and significantly change by the time we get there, if we haven't awakened to some of the issues I'm trying to talk about tonight, as controversial as they may be, to get people to think. Because after all, the ultimate design of this program is to do that. It isn't really to convince you of anything. It's to get you to think about and come to your own conclusions about whatever is right or wrong and whatever is a spiritual side of living or an unspiritual side of living. That's kind of like where I'm at least, in terms of what the attempts are of this particular program. Okay, before we go to break, I want to add another little glitch or feature into this. And that is that placation is one of the greatest sins that we can participate in at the present time. In the past, the United States has participated in it more as a, we'll say, the back-of-the-line type of participation. We usually haven't been in front. We usually are not the beginning of placation. We usually support it in other countries. It usually begins, frankly, overseas in places like Europe. But in the last 10 to 15 years, we have started to become the real placators. We have actually taken the lead in placation for really stupid, if not completely greedy reasons, for some of our politicians to get rich on it, for some of our politicians to get elected by other people who are getting rich on it. This sort of thing is extremely dangerous. What do I mean by placation? I mean where we do whatever we can to accommodate and to help those governments that are truly non-democratic and truly hostile to our very nature and way of life to stay in power because we want their oil, because we want their industry, because we need their populations to buy our products, because of reasons of usually expediency in getting elected by our officials who are corrupt and who are seeking the power that comes from corporations and others who are doing business with these groups of people and these governments. And this is where the placation has been the most serious. We've got to stop it because we are facing extremely difficult karma, in my opinion. That means it's going to come back to hurt us by being the leaders in recent times of placation with really nasty places and nasty governments. And if we don't do something about that, we're probably going to be paying a very, very serious toll. I'm going to tell you what the toll is right before we go to break. The toll is going to be we'll be economically destroyed. We'll be militarily defeated. We will lose the freedoms that we failed to support for other countries. We'll become some of the most victimized and unfree people in the world. You might say, oh, that can't possibly happen here. Well, I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong. But I see that is what is the payback, so to speak, for what the mistakes are that we are presently involved in. So we need to be looking at this as a very, very serious issue to change. And I'm going to talk about some of those changes in the next half of the show. We're going to come back in about 2.5 minutes or so, and then I'll talk about the contradiction I brought up, how we can resolve that contradiction, and how we can be brave and truly great leaders that do not placate the darkness in countries that try to destroy democracy or prevent its inception or in some way to convolute it and turn it into something other than that. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Niles McFlower. And again, we're talking tonight about metaphysics and spirituality. And generally speaking, about how democracy is really about spiritual issues in terms of the development of consciousness in humanity. And as I said at the beginning of the show and mentioned a couple times, we are faced with a contradiction, and that is this. In order to develop democracy, which promotes freedom in terms of the creation of government, and government without freedom is truly destruction, eventually, of the people that it serves. The process requires that a balance to freedom be incorporated, which is consciousness, which also includes love and givingness and tolerance and inclusiveness, planning. All of these things become part of the balance. And those things have to be represented within the people, not just the desire and the action to be free and to be creative, which we have to a large extent in the United States, but we have to balance it. And this is where the problem has been, a lack of balance in a number of countries, not so much in the United States, although we have our times and problems. But in emerging, developing countries, where large amounts of the population have never been or have seldom been educated. And I'm not talking about just education like you go to school and you learn the 3 R's. I'm talking about education in terms of what this program is trying to do, get people to think and help people to be, we'll say, not only creative, but creative in ways that are giving and inclusive towards others. Part of education is breaking down the walls of separativism and allowing people to become inclusive. Now, some people go to some kind of schools in which they do the opposite. The schools themselves tend to create conditions in which people become intolerant. They become closed-minded. They become unable to create in ways that are giving towards others and inclusive. Some of these schools are religious in nature. Sometimes they are completely political. And sometimes they're run by governments and or radical organizations. But I think it's important to understand that if we're going to have democracy, we have to have education that is inclusive itself. It needs to be widespread, and it needs to allow people to develop in ways that, we'll say, as individuals, they can think and they can disagree, but they also can understand the ways others think. And this is critical if you're going to have a whole nation of people who are going to practice some form of democracy, be it a republic or direct democracy, however they're going to do it. It has to come from within. And in order to change a population, to do so requires at least 20 years or approximately a generation's worth. Now, you might say, well, that's a problem because we've got, don't we have like dozens and dozens of countries in this world in which people don't get much education, or if they are educated, they're educated by a dark government, a political system, or a religious system that completely negates all the things that you talked about in terms of education. Yes, that is true. But we also live in a world in which it is possible to get information to those people in many different ways, and to educate them in many different ways that breaks through some of the barriers that the governments try to put up. If we allow those governments to act freely to prevent us from being able to do that by our own implications, then the results are going to be disastrous. So what we need to do is we need to have, you know, kind of like Radio Free America or Radio Free World, in which the Internet is now involved, and many other sources in which people can become educated about becoming giving and loving and inclusive, as well as planning, as well as balancing those concepts and the concept that there is a creator, whatever religion, I don't care, but there is a creator, and that this creator you can get to understand as being part of us, part of all life, and that we can, as people that are free, help those who are not free to become free. We used to do this. We really used to do this much more in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, when we were fighting a single monolithic, we'll call it, evil called communism. We seem to have lost grasp or lost understanding that this needs to continue on a worldwide scale, or else we're going to have many, many more governments that are dictatorial and destructive to life itself, and that will eventually, as I said before the break, come back to haunt us. And we can't placate. We have to fight. The fight has to be about the minds and souls of those people who are under the dictates of these terrible governments, even if it costs us great amounts of wealth at the immediate time, and if it stands in the way of some of our, we'll say, material wants and desires. Because that's our test. If we are greedy and we say, well, we're going to trade with this country or that country because we need this or that, and who cares how they treat their people? Who cares if they leave their people in darkness if they convince their people there's no such thing as a creator, if they try to destroy all forms of thought about a creator, if they are totally non-spiritual and totally destructive eventually to life itself, we are going to be paying a terrible toll for that. So we need to let go of seeking the material issues that we unfortunately make a lot of our decisions about and take the higher road. This is a difficult road. It's a road that requires that we be examples of what we preach to ourselves and to others, in the sense that democracy is the better way of existence, and not everybody is quite there yet, but the way to help them to get there is by helping them to gain understanding, which is, again, another word for consciousness. It's still part of the second part of God's mind and thought. And if we develop these things in others and help them to develop it, then we're going to do good. And if we, at the same time, remove the placation and the reward of doing business with us and getting our money or getting our material things while we get theirs, then we have replaced that with a higher principle. And this is very difficult because, unfortunately, it will, in the immediate sense, create some strife, lower some of our standard of living, but in the long run, it will save us. If we don't do this, we will be finished. I am virtually certain of this, but again, I hope I'm wrong, because I don't want to be certain of anything of such nature, but I believe that we are under a great test right now in terms of the fortitude of our own spiritual side, and to allow millions, even billions of people to be held in bondage so they can make better shoes for us, or they can produce this or that which we would like them to have, and we at the same time are seeking to avoid conflict. These are the kinds of things that are the dressings for the eventual destruction of ourselves, if not all parts of the planet. We've got to stand up and say what is right and do something to make a change. Our biggest asset is our understanding of our own freedom, our understanding of our relationship to our Creator, and to stand by that instead of worrying about the material issues that so often become the dictates of our existence. Now, how does that fit in with some of the things I've said about maintaining our economy as strong as possible so that we can find alternative methods of developing energy sources, etc.? Well, it does. And it does in this way. We become more homegrown in our development instead of seeking to become partners with darkness. We work with the sides of light, and when the other democracies in the world or those that are emerging or so, we help them to develop themselves as well, while we fight as a force against the darkness that is surrounding us and growing rapidly, and not tolerate this sort of, we'll say, government and or thought process, political process, religious process, that destroys the freedoms and the thoughts in others. If we do not do this, we will find ourselves eventually having to face it in our own backyard. And it will be all around us, and in many different ways, it will come back to haunt us. Okay, so if we are able to educate through both action, because most of the time, even the governments that are evil are looking at us as being, oh, well, they have all this material stuff, we want the same stuff. Well, if we show that we get that way by staying by our principles and not supporting them, then they will eventually, over time, realize that they don't have a lot of choices, because they're going to be more or less segregated from those that are proving that freedom with love and givingness and understanding, etc., are all together the best way to live. We're proving that a spiritual life, which includes the material side, I'm not excluding it by any stretch of the imagination, because this is a physical universe. We're supposed to be developing material solutions for how that is part of our own creator, in a way, our way of co-creating. But it is important to at the same time recognize that we're willing to sacrifice some of that so that others will see that this is the way. If we don't, we become the problem that we were trying to overcome, and we're just no better than they are, in a sense. Okay, what else can we do besides the education, Rob, which I suggested? Education can come in many ways, through example, but also through formal methods. We can set up economic systems that are fairly strict and tough. I'm going to say something that's going to sound extremely radical right now, but I want to give you an example of something that people are talking about, and that is the Red Chinese own about 60 to 70% of our national debt. Now, you may not know that, but that's the truth. That's about $7 billion out of $9 billion. A trillion dollars that they own of our national debt. And a lot of people are saying, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We better placate China because poor us are going to be held ransom by these people. Well, I'd like to kind of turn that around and make a suggestion. I've said this a couple months ago on the same show, and that is that we just say we're absolving ourselves of that national debt, and go ahead and take everything that we own in China, because that's what they'll do, and if you don't like it, too bad, but we're not going to pay it back to you, because the way you exist, the way you treat us, and the way you treat your people is wrong. And you might say, oh, how are they treating us? Well, they're stealing most of our secrets, you may not know this, and other things. So we can do something about that with that's one country. We can do this with a lot of countries. There's a whole bunch of countries we can do this with. If Saudi Arabia is an example, which has very little freedom for its people, and certainly is not a democracy, continues to function the way they function, we just simply say, you know what? All those bases we have there and everything else we're doing to protect your oil, we're leaving. See ya. I think in a very short time, we would see some response from them as well. You see, we actually are in a superior position, not the inferior position at this time. Now, that's a very radical move, one that would probably lead to some elements, if not a complete war. But that war may not be avoidable anyway. And what I'm suggesting at this point is that if we take the high road and say, if you continue to do the things that you're doing that are so dark and evil, this is our response. You don't like it? Well, that's too bad. And it really puts us in a position in which we have economic. Now, I'm not suggesting that we go ahead and drop atom bombs or nuclear bombs or, you know, hydrogen bombs or whatever on them. I'm suggesting that the biggest bomb of all is probably to say, you know what? Well, you own $7 trillion of our debt. Bye. We're not paying it. We're not giving you any more currency that involves it, and we're even going to change our currency to a new standard, a new kind of note or whatever. We're not paying it off. Goodbye. And what happens is that other country, in this case China, becomes bankrupt. They become bankrupt within about 30 days, and they can't pay their debts because they were holding on to this debt as part of their asset, and that asset is gone. Plus, they were trading with us, and we stopped trading with them. Of course, they'll stop trading with us, too, and they'll probably take over a bunch of businesses that we had as investors, investments in their country. But that's okay, too. Some people will take it on the chin for a while. They'll be very wealthy in this country, and they'll survive. Those companies will even survive, because most of the time they're diversified in a number of different ways. They chose to go to this other place and do business because it was cheap and because they were getting a great deal, and the government itself was helping to subject their own people to almost slave labor, if not slave labor. So that's what was going on. So at that point, we would obviously be in the upper hand, and we could obviously make great changes. Now, how fast we want to do that, to what level, et cetera, would have to be greatly discussed. I'm just throwing out the most radical of idea because I want to counter the fear that people have of what these other countries can do to us. But they can't, really. The whole thing is really backwards from the truth. The truth is that we still are the real power, the real power, because we believe in spiritual principles. This country is able to sustain democracy, and has been able to, and created basically it, in modern times at least. I'm not talking about the Greek level of it, but I'm talking about modern times, because we believe in there being a creator. And we find that creator within ourselves and all of life. And we believe it's self-evident that that's true. And we do so at a rate of over 80%, 8 out of 10 people believe that at the present time in this country. And it's been at least that high almost since its inception. That's a huge percentage. A lot of countries that isn't true in because it's been wiped out or never was developed. Now, what else can we do? We can promote the concept, the very concept of generalized spiritual thought, not religion. I'm not a proponent that we should adopt a specific religion and tell everybody else in the world that they should follow it. No, just the opposite. We should become ecumenical. We should look at our process as being something so great based upon the fact that there are so much diversity in religion in our country that it really is more of a spiritual issue, and that it is through spiritual focus that we can possibly make a difference in these other countries. By promoting and expressing what spirituality is, how it can be fostered, and why it may be lacking in some countries. Again, through education, but now we're talking about spiritual education. We're not talking about intellectual or knowledge-based education, and we're not talking about religion per se. We're talking about something that's more wide, inclusive, and encompassing, and it deals with something new in terms of a policy that we don't deny, but we exclaim that we are a spiritual country, and we have been since its inception, and it's what has led to our greatest success, including that of the development of democracy. Without it, we would have failed. And if we don't see that now, and we don't promote it, we may still fail. Because this is one of the great assets, if not the greatest asset, that we have. It's the very foundation of what created this country in the Declaration of Independence. Granted, it's not truly part of the Constitution, because the Constitution protects the right of the people to also not practice any level of spirituality or any level of religion. It protects that right. So if something protects the right, it can't exclaim the right. But at the same time, we can exclaim it to other countries, and we can show that it is a very important resource that these other countries may be lacking. Could you imagine, I want you to think about this, a country of a billion and a half people, such as Red China, that suddenly had an awakening spiritually, where most of the inhabitants became devoutly spiritual. I'm not talking about any specific religion at this point. And felt that they were part of their creator and vice versa, and that they were here in this world not just to get a new car or to get a car or to live in a city instead of out in the country or whatever, but to actually live a life in which they are giving back to a world and developing themselves inclusively as part of their own country and their own world, and preventing their own government from doing harm to millions of people that may exist there. So could you imagine that and see how the present system could maintain itself? It couldn't. It absolutely would fail. There's no possibility that the few million people that run the entire country of a billion and a half people would be able to keep a foothold, be able to do the things that they do, and be able to achieve the lies that they do with the placid, excusing issues on the part of the people. It would be ridiculous. They would be unable to achieve such things if there was a spiritual movement at hand in that country or in any country. Again, I've been using them as an example. I want you to realize there are many dozens of countries that fall into the same genre. I'm just using them because they are the biggest, and it's easiest for us to see it because we have so much to do with them at the present time. It's almost like we're married in some ways to who or what they may become. Okay, I want you to think about all of that. I hope it has been a thoughtful program, and I have a few announcements here I just wanted to tell you about. This Sunday, July 13th, at 1170 a.m., for those of you who can get it, which is any part of the northeastern part of the United States, it's not the entire East Coast, but it's Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island. It's a large part, not the entire part of the East Coast, but it's a large part. I'm going to have a program on what is thought. Okay, hopefully you'll listen in and find out what thought is. And that's from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. For those of you elsewhere, well, you know how to figure it out, don't you? And also, let's see, on July 21st, Mimi, who's, goes out and speaks on behalf of all of the members of the spiritual group that I am a member of, she likes to talk sometimes about such topics as Atlantis, and she will be doing so over at Borders Books and Music on Monday, July 1st, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Purchase, no charge. If you are in the Phoenix metropolitan area, come on by, drop by, and visit her, because she is going to, I think, go on with this topic. I believe she's been talking about it before this, but if she hasn't, then you can go ahead and have a listen. So for today's show, let's do a little summary. Generally speaking, if we want to promote democracy in this world, we're going to need to make some sacrifices, both as a nation and a multiple of nations, in order to make some changes, because our own democracies are at stake. We are the ones in jeopardy by not promoting democracy. And what it really is a spiritual awakening and a spiritual, we'll say, expression of the people that are involved in this creation. You can't have a democracy in which people are not conscious, because it will inevitably fail. And we need to raise the consciousness of others by being sacrificial about material issues and not placating governments and political organizations and religious groups who are against it. Because if we continue to do that, we will fail. We will destroy ourselves. Our own karma will be to lose that which is the greatest treasure, our own freedoms and our own ability to govern ourselves. So it's extremely important that we, at this time, start making some changes, because we've been doing the wrong thing for at least 15 years. Interestingly, the end of the Cold War kind of started this new, we'll almost say it, consciousness, but lack of consciousness, of placation and not caring about the issues that I have been talking about tonight. That's kind of like the trigger that brought it on. It's really unfortunate, but that's what took place. So we can make a difference by educating. We can make a difference by making economic choices that unfortunately sometimes may hurt us, but also will be a force to be reckoned with on the part of those who want to destroy freedoms and want to destroy the ability for democracy to grow. And we can also, at the same time, be an example of and promote spiritual principles, which I don't know why we don't do this, but we should be doing it, because it's what has made us who we are. And the fact that we don't exclaim it and say, hey, you know, we figured this out a few hundred years ago, and we're still not willing to say this is what it's all about. Well, you know, the founders of this country had an idea of what it was about. We need to get that back and say, hey, this is what it is about, and we are part of a creator who gave us great abilities to do things and gave us the ability to choose to co-create with it. In that co-creation process, we need to promote the very fact that there is a creator, and we can choose to do that. That's an important issue. Okay, hopefully that has all come through. And until next week, and hopefully it won't be that long, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.